Facing challenges and overcoming setbacks is part of doing business. Whether you have the expertise to survive them or not could mean the difference between success or failure. Welcome to We Are Women, featuring revealing conversations that provide invaluable insights into the success secrets of female masterminds. A must-listen for every entrepreneurial woman. Now here's your host, Janine Vosper.
Welcome to this episode of the We Are Women podcast. Today I have something a little bit different, but it's still on all of the conversations that we have about leadership. But I've got Gretchen Gagel, and Gretchen has been working in the construction industry for 40 years. So she's got so much to share with us. I'm absolutely thrilled to have her on this podcast. She is the founder of Women Thriving in Construction, a global institute with degrees in mechanical engineering, MBA, and a PhD in leadership and change agility. That's interesting. I haven't heard that term before. Gretchen, we'll have a little play with that. She brings unmatched expertise to the industry. She is the former chair of Brinkman Construction and soon to be published. Well, not soon to be published. No. You are a published author of Building Women Leaders, a blueprint for women thriving in construction. Let's go and explore this a little bit more, because there's points in there and there's so many points. And we were chatting just beforehand, and I'll let Gretchen know that for those that are listeners of the podcast, you'll know that I've mentioned it many times about my family being in construction, and I know there's common points, and women in construction is a very different space. So thank you. Welcome, Gretchen. I'm glad you could be here.
Thank you, Janine. Very happy to be here.
It is unusual for women to be in construction in 2025, but that's not where you started.
Yeah, no, 1983, intern for Lone Star Gas in Dallas, Texas. So yeah, it's been 42 years. I tell a lot of stories in the book. The book became very more autobiographical than I thought it was going to be, in a great way to kind of reflect on my journey and telling the story of my father, who was a construction equipment dealer. He owned a dealership. He dealt Komatsu and Barber Green Pavers and Heister. And so I very much grew up in construction. But when I told him I wanted to go to engineering school, his reaction was, nope, absolutely not. In fact, when I turned down my Harvard acceptance to go to engineering school, he disowned me and we didn't speak for 2 years.
Wow, so, that's commitment on your behalf.
Yeah, and really people ask me what gave me the courage to do that, and I really don't know the answer. I just felt compelled. I really felt like engineering was what I wanted to do. And yeah, I never worked as an engineer. That's the irony. Ralston Purina hired me in 1986 as their first female operations manager running manufacturing plants. So I actually started out for 7 years in manufacturing, progressed up to running a plant with 800 employees when I was 27 years old.
Wow. So obviously, I mean, obviously they saw a lot in you to offer that and that capacity to do that at 27. That's quite interesting. I want to touch on that, but I also want to touch on, as you said, the courage to do something that, and I think there's people who are either listening that it's within their field of scope, or whether they've got daughters or nieces or family members who take on something that is not what's expected or not what's encouraged. And to yours was the extreme. Definitely you're not going to do it. It's a very big deal to go against family and just do what you, without even knowing what it was.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because I'd just come back from a recruiting week at the Naval Academy. And as a National Merit Finalist, I spent a week there and they did classes on all the different types of engineering. And that's the first time I really got interested. And I couldn't decide between mechanical and civil. So I did mechanical engineering, but my electives in civil. And my father just thought it was going to be a hard path for me. And it has been a hard path for me at times. But it really taught me that just because something's hard doesn't mean it's not what you're supposed to be doing. Mm. And it's we as parents, now that I have two grown children and my first grandchild, we only want the best for our kids. And there's a natural tendency to steer them towards what our unconscious bias tells us is going to be a fulfilling career for them.
So are they in construction? I have to ask.
My son is, he's a mining engineer. He runs an aggregate plant, and I joke, he makes big rocks into small rocks and puts them in piles and sells them to people. He's heard mom tell that joke about 1,000 times. And my daughter started in engineering, ended up switching to accounting, and is married to an architect. So we have lots of people in the business. I keep trying to get her into construction accounting, but so far I've been unsuccessful.
I find it really interesting when families tend to follow in the footsteps, even though your father wasn't in that, he was still attached to that industry. And for you, I always find that fascinating. There's families of doctors and families of lawyers, and for mine, families of in construction, right from my grandparents, my grandfather to father to husband to sons. And I joke when I used to, go out when I was 18, 19, 20 and be at the hotels, and I must have had a sign on my head that said, carpenter's daughter, or only talk to me if you're in construction, because every fella that I would talk to was in some way connected with construction. It's something that fascinates me, that and whether it's just that familiarity that does that. The and so your accent, but you live in Australia. What brought you to Australia?
I was with an Australian partner. So after my MBA in 94, I joined the largest investment banking strategy firm in construction. So that was the complete immersion into construction. I was woman number two there. So at least I had one in front of me, 170 or so consultants and investment bankers, I think at the time, and had a successful career. I ended up leaving for a little bit. I ran a women's foundation for 5 years, which was really fulfilling. Mostly just had to get off a plane when my kids were 7 and 8 years old. I'd flown every, well, 48 weeks out of the year for 11 years. So I have a TEDx talk and a book called 8 Steps to Being a Great Working Mom that raises money for charity that I did as a little project a few years ago. But I was finishing up as president of another company and finishing my PhD. So flying 120 flights a year, running a company and doing my PhD at the same time. And I looked at my partner and said, "Your mom's wife is fail your mom, your mom's health is failing in Australia. I've always wanted to live in a foreign country. Let's go live in Australia." So we actually lived in Canberra, moved over in 2018, spent 2 years there, and then moved to Melbourne as managing director, Asia Pacific for a global strategy firm.
That they're all very big steps, and that I'm hearing this overachiever mother, manager, leader, worker, partner. That's how did you do it all, Gretchen?
Well, that's what I wrote the book about, 8 Steps to Being a Great Working Mom. And it's a short book because it's for working moms. And there's 25 women I interviewed for it. So it's not just my opinions. But the reason I wrote the book is when my kids were little, a girlfriend who was pregnant with her first child came to me and said, "You've got it all. You're traveling, you got the house, you got the kids, how do you do it all? It's so easy for you." And I went, "Oh my God, that I am one sick nanny day away from complete disaster. I've got my mom, my sister, everybody's pitching in to make this whole thing work." And I realized so my kids are 28 and 29 now. So 96 and 97, they were born. And I realized we weren't having really candid, frank conversations about how hard it was to be a working mom and a working dad. Now 70% of moms work, right? So dads don't have June Cleaver waiting at home with their dry cleaning anymore. And that's why I wrote the book for her. And then I published it 10 years later. What I wanted to call the book is Make the Decisions That Work for You and Tell Everybody to F Off, right? I mean, just
I
like,
love it. I love
don't work, don't judge people. People
that.
judged me because I flew so much. Oh my gosh, who watches your kids when you're gone? And so I started saying, you know what? I put them in the trunk of my car with a little food and water, and so far it seems to be working out fine. But
I
we,
love
you
your
know,
sense of humor. That would be my sense of humor as well.
yeah, but you know, judging people for working or telling girls they can't go to engineering school, or everybody's getting up in the morning trying to live the best version of themselves, be the best version. And we put so much pressure on ourselves as moms. We think we can be like Bill Gates and Heidi Klum and Martha Stewart all wrapped up into one 24/7, right? You have to cut yourself some slack, give yourself some grace, and let go of perfection.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the hardest things, because the way women judge themselves, they've done surveys on it, is 2 points: how we look and how good we are as a parent.
Yep.
That's and it's no wonder then that breeds guilt, because it's either if you're not working, well, you should be working and contributing to the family, or if you are working, well, then you're taking time away from the children and you're not contributing to, P and C at school, or
Yep.
and it becomes this guilt factor for most women trying to have the life they want to create for themselves, and to just eliminating that guilt. How did you go with that?
If you Google my TEDx talk, I do something on stage about guilt that's very funny. I didn't have all the answers. I tried to learn from other women too. So Rebecca Love Corliss was on the Colorado Supreme Court, and I heard her speak, and she became a friend and a neighbor. We have sons the same age, and she said, "You can't be at everything. Ask your kids what's important to them." And it was such a lesson for me, because we beat ourselves up about where, you know, I'm not at this soccer game or whatever. And so I would sit down with my kids and say, "Hey, mom can't be at everything. What's important to you?" I never miss their birthdays. I would miss my anniversary. That may be why I'm divorced from husband number one after 20 years, but I never ever missed a kid's birthday. No speech, no client thing was ever more important. After my daughter was born, I cut back from 4 nights of travel a week to two on average. And that still sounds like a lot, but once I hit 8 nights of travel in a month, that was it. No client, nothing would make me break that rule. And so you have to set the boundaries, feel good about them. And lastly, I read Seven Habits of Highly Effective People decades ago, and I try and reread it. In fact, it's about time for me to reread it again.
I'm with you, Gretchen. I've reread it multiple times
Well, he
as well.
talks about your goals by role, and I go off and do a goal setting at the beach every year religiously for the weekend by myself, mostly by myself. A couple of times I took my kids, but they knew, hey, mom's thinking over there on the beach. And when my mother was dying of Alzheimer's, I actually ended up quitting my job for 6 months. But before that, I couldn't be there every day. I was a single mom with two teenagers. I was the breadwinner. I was assistant dean of a business school. I was traveling, raising $17 million a year, my team was. And so I set a goal that I would see her once a week and really focused quality time for 90 minutes. And then I would not guilt myself that other people went and saw their parents 2 or 3 times a week. You just have to decide, like, the 8 nights a week of travel. That's doable. And if it's not doable, then I need to go find another job, because I can't really do that job, which is what I did when they were 7 and 8. I finally said, okay, I need to get off a plane for a while.
Yes, and that's an important factor, and that's not sort of the big responsible jobs that you had, although I did work as a GM of a business for 20 years, but it was the before that, and this is something that I think is important as well. So when my children were younger, thinking, what can I do? I went and did a fitness leaders course and became an aerobic instructor, because all the aerobic centers had child minding. That was part of the, so I could take the children with me during that time.
There you go.
And the boys would go, are we going to the men's aerobics or the but they made up their own names to all the different places, and they had friends in each one of these. And then they went to primary school, and that changed up things as well, because I wanted to be involved, coach the soccer. What can I do now? Then went and did more management study, and then fitted in a sales rep role where I had the flexibility. And then once they were older, stepped into the I'm in the office, or I'm away traveling to the mining areas and in the other role. And I think that's important too, isn't it? It's what you're saying you did at this time. This is the role. This is what works.
This is what works.
Yeah.
And then there was a time when it was like time out. I had a great financial advisor. I had just divorced. I was the one giving money away in that, and she said, "Nope, we're going to take this much out of savings, and you're going to quit your job." And my mom, I quit my job in February. She was in hospice by August and died in October. And it was one of the best decisions I ever made. Felt big gulp, you know, oh my gosh. But she said, "You'll make it up." And I have. That was, let's see, she died 12 years ago, 13 years ago. But yeah, and reinventing ourselves. And I think women don't give, we don't give each other, ourselves enough credit for having the courage. When I moved to Australia, I knew one person from a business standpoint, only because Qantas Services, which is a listed company in America, was a client, and they introduced me to their head of Australia, where they have five companies. That was it. One person. And didn't bring a lot of money, $10,000. That's it. That's all I've ever brought to Australia. And started a business. I've been single for 2.5 years. I own a place in Melbourne. So it's been difficult. And sometimes you have to sit back and go, "Wow, that was a really brave thing to do, Gretchen, is just be 54 years old, 54, in the energy and construction industry, and reinvent yourself in a place where my biggest clients in America were General Motors, Intel, Marriott, Starbucks, anybody. I helped them. I advised them on how to spend billions of dollars of construction in the most cost-effective way. There's no GM in Australia. There's no Intel.
There's no industry in Australia.
Well, and all the most construction spend is government. And I did a little bit of work with the Corps of Engineers and the GSA in America, but I really kind of shied away from the government work. And I get here, and it's like, wow, it's all government work. So I really had to reinvent myself, which is how I got into running women's leadership programs. So what a gift that was.
That and you're correct about the difference between the US and here. I mean, the population difference to start with, 27 million compared to 350 million. It's and the businesses are just so much bigger when people talk about employees than what we have here. So it is, fine because of the level that you were working at, finding those big companies that you can contribute the way you contribute, that are expanding or what they're financially doing with construction. It's quite a big, it's a very different environment, as you would have found.
Well, and so I pivoted. And it's funny because when I joined FMI in 94, I was doing strategy work for contractors and partnering, you know, project issue resolution things. And we had a lot of contractors in 94. They're like, "You're sending a 30-year-old woman to tell me how to run my company. I'm not sure I'm in for that." So after 3 years, I started a brand new business for them, the business of consulting on the client side with the General Motors. They didn't care that I was a woman. Intel didn't care that I was a woman. And that was a very, and my mentor, Hugh Rice, I took him out, wrote a business plan. He said, "No money, nights and weekends, you got to keep your billings up." But I turned that into a successful business for them. When I came over here, I was speaking at a pipeline conference about energy company contractor alliances, nothing to do with women. And the CEO, Steve Davies of the Australian Pipeline and Gas Association, stood up in front of the entire audience at this conference with a senior leader panel and said, "We have, I'm embarrassed there's not a woman here. We have to do better in our industry for women." And I took him out for coffee a few weeks later and said, "The American Gas Association has a women's leadership program. How about we?" I didn't know what I was going to do when I got to Australia. Really, I had no idea how I was going to earn a living. I said, "Let's How about we replicate it? And I had them write him a letter, and we're running cohort 10 right now. In fact, I'm coming to Brisbane in 2 days. We're having an alumni session for the first 9 cohorts of
That's
that
brilliant.
program. And now I'm running it in the crane industry. Now I'm running it in America with the Construction User Roundtable. And then Wiley comes and asks me to write a book about women. And then all of a sudden, you're like, the universe is telling me that I'm supposed to be helping women, that I need to. You have to really set your ego aside, though, because when you're used to sitting at that level and you have, I hate to use the word clawed your way to the top, but the challenges as a woman in construction are obvious, right? And but I'm loving the last 6 years of working with women in the industry and continue to sit on boards. That's my other passion. In fact, I was just meeting with the CEO of a $3 billion engineering firm a couple of hours ago. There's not a lot of women that are qualified to sit on a $13 billion contractor board. So I like doing the boards too. They're very strategic.
And that the word that keeps popped up earlier when you're talking, particularly, the 27-year-old running the industrial manufacturing, is people talk about that glass ceiling all the time. It just sounds like, and you make it sound so easy, Gretchen,
Oh, gosh.
that you just sort of pushed it and out of the way and it was not a problem. But I know that there was probably a lot more to that, that you had to keep punching at it, and then until that success came, when people recognized your name and said, yes, this is the person we want, because they could see that you had the ability to achieve the results that would assist them.
Well, and I had wonderful male allies. So when at FMI, Lou Bainbridge was my first group manager. When contractors said, think Gretchen's coming out to do my plan. I think I need like a David or a John. He told them to go find another consulting firm because I was an important member of their team. And that's the kind of when we talk about zero tolerance for bullying or whatever, you have to stand behind your values. And I interviewed him for the book. I said, Lou, I just need to make sure this is right. This was a long time ago, right? This was 30 years ago. And what gave you the fortitude to do that? And he pointed to Hugh Rice, who's both of our mentors, who started the Denver office in 1979, and that he set the tone around his values and what was really important to him, and that makes it easy to make those kinds of decisions when you're in a culture where you really clearly understand. That doesn't mean I didn't deal with a lot of difficult things at that firm. A lot of challenges, but you pick your battles, and I wasn't going to let anybody interfere with me doing what I was having a blast doing. And you have to love what you're doing. You're not doing it to be a crusader. And young women now are like, oh my gosh, you were such a trailblazer. And I wasn't thinking I was a trailblazer. I was just, to help right before I moved to Australia, I helped General Motors deliver a $3 billion program on time and under budget for three, worked with that team, my team, with them for 3 years. That's fun. I built a Baltimore Ravens stadium. I've built light rail, airports, pharmaceutical. It's fun. You have to love what you're doing. You don't get up in the morning and say, I'm going to do something very, very hard just to be a trailblazer. You're just doing what you love.
I love the sound of that. And it's like, in whatever it is, if you're doing something that you love, it's the stresses and struggles and challenges, when they occur, that you have the capacity to work through them, because you're doing it for, that why. You're doing it with a purpose behind it. It's awesome. So just a little bit more on the women's leadership. What does that look like?
It looks like right now this book that I'm on tour for, Building Women Leaders, writing a 340-page book in 7 months. There's 129 people in the book. Anna Mears, we were talking about Olympian Anna Mears, is in the book. Lots of interesting thoughts. I'm still running the women's leadership programs because they're very soul filling for me. Groups of 25 women, you're with them for 6 months. That I'm like a den mom. I think I'm like a den mom to all of them. I mean, and they'll call me years later. Hey, I've got an interview. It's really a gift. But then I got this bigger vision and have started this institute, Women Thriving in Construction, a global institute. It's really meant to be an instigator of bold thinking around how we get more women into construction on a global scale. I've been sitting on the Construction Industry Culture Task Force for Australia. I sit on a similar task force in America. We're having very similar conversations and not a lot of cross-pollinization. UK is doing some incredible things around women in construction. So, how do we assemble the boldest thinkers, and how are we working with good data about where we are? Because people are shocked when I tell them that only 2.6% of electricians in America are female. 2.6, and we have
That's
a
probably
electrician.
one of the trades where the physicality is not a big deal. My youngest son's an electrician, and it's one of the reason he chose it, because he was the smart one as well. And he just says, I don't have to be carrying things, digging big things, and it's much easier. And then he gets someone else to climb through the roofs.
Yeah, well, and in America, our data center construction, which everyone should care about, this is not just a construction issue. This is a societal issue. We build and maintain the assets of society. We keep your lights on. We keep your roads drivable. We keep your buildings from collapsing. And we need electricians to build data centers. And everything you're doing on your phone and your computer is being stored in a data center. So we need electricians. And I think that so really making sure we're doing the research and providing good data on women, convening the boldest thinkers, and telling stories of things that are working. New South Wales right now is putting $20 million over 3 years into getting women into construction. That's a significant investment, and they're doing some really creative things. We want to be the people that then tell that story globally so that somebody in Canada reads the story and says, wow, they did this and that work. They're taking 25 women at a time and taking them to job sites and telling them about construction because they don't even know what they would possibly do in construction. And there's lots of non-technical jobs in construction. In fact, don't tell the engineers this, and I'll say this as an engineer. I mean, the engineering is in the design and the architecture. But relationships and scheduling and coordination make construction projects happen. And women are good at all of those things.
Yes, it's particularly good at all of those things. Yeah, that's interesting. So how, with all of this think tank, what's some ideas that they've come up with?
Well, we haven't, we've only been a think tank for 3 months,
Right.
4 months. So we're in the very beginnings. You can go to our website, womenthrivinginconstruction.org, and we're just about to put our fourth paper up about this sharing of information. We are just going to be getting our social media up in 26 to start telling the stories. We're actually even thinking of starting an award. I love the James Beard Award. I'm a cooking show groupie. That's what I do to tune out when my brain has to shut down. I watch cooking shows and I love food. And the James Beard Award has been instrumental celebrating chefs. How do we find these stories and get them out there of what's actually working? There's a lot that's happening in the grassroots. Lots of people, I can't think of this woman's organization. Now I'm embarrassed. I just saw her speak in Boston about 6 weeks ago. She runs a program for high school girls and they build a community project. It might be things in a park. It might be, but they're exposed to building. They get to use tools. There's lots of great things happening out there. We're just not doing enough of it and we're not scaling it.
No, that sounds, and storytelling component, I mean, that's what I do, is help people tell stories, and the stories of the and the and the relevance of them telling a particular story. But digging deeper than digging, looking at, say, your story about why engineering, I'm sure that there's, if I went back before those decisions, there would be childhood components to that. That was just always the way that, you know, you were the girl, only girl in class that got top marks for maths, maybe. There'll be components that becomes the essence of it. So it's not that you just turn up necessarily at 18 and go, I want to do this. It's always been part of your life. But those stories are so important because people connect with stories.
Absolutely. You probably know my friend Gabriel Dolan then, who's written quite a few books on storytelling as well. In fact, her new book just came out this week on artificial intelligence and storytelling. Intelligent storytelling. Oh my gosh, I remember the title. But we do connect with stories. And I spoke years ago, gosh, probably a decade ago at least, with a woman who started a it's not exactly a toy, it's a building set called Goldie Blocks. And it's available on Amazon. And her research, she's brilliant. She went to Stanford, is that boys will build something to build something. Girls want to know who's going to be on this bridge? How does this bridge impact society? And that's a story we need to tell, because we as engineers love to get into the technical. And I was chair of the board of Bridges to Prosperity. We build footbridges around the world to end isolation, poverty, and they'd put a picture of a bridge up, and I'm like, oh my God, here go the engineers. You know, it's 170 meters. How do we tension the cable? You know, and I, the first time I went to one in Bolivia, and we are climbing down this goat track that, I kid you not as wide as my laptop. I don't know how we all got down to this bridge. And they were playing music the entire time. It took us like an hour to get down there. They cooked probably a month's worth of their food for us, because this bridge was so critical. And I've been to Rwanda, and they have access that increases females going to market by 75% if they have a consistent way to get across a bridge. So that's two different approaches. That's one group going, oh my God, we tensioned it using this and 170 meters. And then there's this other group going, yes, and women don't have to worry that they're going to get stuck on the wrong side of the river and for a physical safety challenge and caring for their children. So they'll go to market and they will grow things. And those are the different stories we need to tell about construction, not just the technical, but the societal impact.
Completely agree. And they're such powerful stories, and everyone can connect with that. It makes a big difference. And that's with your book, isn't it? There's stories in there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Gabrielle Dolan and I play golf. We play a lot of golf together. I've known her since I moved here. In fact, somebody gave me one of her books and I reached out and introduced myself to her. Every chapter starts and ends with a story. And there's so many stories, you know, and you'll say, well, why is Anna Mears in a book about women leading in construction? If you've heard the story of her breaking her neck and what resilience looks like, and the other thing I love about the first time I saw Anna Mears speak, she put a picture of herself up on a slide, and then she put up her whole team one by one, her nutritionist, her psychologist, from when she was competing. And she said, you see an athlete standing on that podium, but this is my team, and they all have to work. It's like a wheel, and it all has to be interconnected. And that's a really powerful message about teams and how you build teams of people. So those are the kind of stories that are in the book and prompts to have you think about your story. And really, it's just a darn good book about leadership, I think. And I actually ran into a man in DC last week who read it. I want men to read it. There's one chapter on dominant culture and unconscious bias. I'd be remiss if I didn't lift up some of the challenges, but it's really about how you develop as a leader, my model of grounded self-leadership, how you're grounded in your values, how you build strong, trusting relationships, how you lead high-performing teams.
Excellent. And that I've written, one of my books is called Good Girls Do Sell. And I was talking to somebody at an event this morning and mentioned it, and I also mentioned the podcast. I said, He mentioned his wife and what she was doing for the business. I said, "You'll have to tell her about the podcast. It's called We Are Women, particularly designed for women or any men smart enough to listen." And it took him that second, and he's gone, "Very good. That's very good."
Well, we need men to understand our lived experience, and those are the men that really get it. I'll tell a very brief story that happened recently. I agreed to record a guest lecture for an Australian university in their MBA program on global construction supply chain. Nothing about women, nothing about women's leadership, nothing about the book, just a global supply chain expert. And at the end of it, 45 minutes, this professor said, "Dr. Gagel, thank you so much for coming. I'm sure you're going to be an incredible role model for the women in our program." And I looked in the camera and I said, "Well, I hope I'm a role model for the men as well." And he had self-identified as being from a different country. And I said, you know, in my mind, I'm like, that would be like me saying, "You'll be a role model for everybody from this country." Well, you want to be a role model for everybody, right? And it's not intentional, it's not malicious, but until you have walked around the world looking different than everybody else, that's dominant culture. You could be a man in nursing years ago. It's not a gender specific thing. It's just about dominant. It's me being American in Australia. People don't know how to talk to me about politics right now, right? I'm in a different dominant culture as an American in Australia. So I think that creates a lot of empathy and being present to the fact that people are having different lived experiences because of where they're from, because of their gender, because of their socioeconomic background. Yeah, and great.
Age as well. My ex design more probably the same Chinese star sign. I'm 12 years older than yourself. So that the era
Dragon.
I grew up in was very different and very pragmatic, very stoic. You know, just get on with the job. It's a different, very different attitude towards things than it is, say, for, you know, the generations that followed.
Yeah,
It's
the Construction Industry Institute did a great study on this, and it showed that it showed by age. There's this graphic in my head, and it was the lived experience in construction, and older people are like, "Yeah, it's fine. You know, you got hazed, whatever." And the younger people are like, "Nope." And it's young men and women, "No. Not going to be bullied, not going to be hazed, don't want to be in that environment." It is very generational.
It's and we could talk a lot about resilience because that's a sort of favorite topic of mine also. And because resilience, if you haven't had challenges, it's very hard to build resilience.
And that's back to where we started this about being parents. You want everything to be smooth sailing for your kids, but then they don't build up resilience and they have to skin their knees. And it's really hard to see when it's happening. But yeah, I think living in a world where that we respect, that's where I go back to so much of this goes back to living with respect, respecting others, caring, not judging, letting everybody live the life they want to lead, you know, and just get it's like booing Taylor Swift at the Super Bowl. Well, I don't
I don't follow that at all. What?
understand it. It's like, are you booing her because she's beautiful, because she's talented,
She's got
because
a lot of money.
right. Which of these is the reason that you're booing her? Not to get into the politics of America right now, but just, you know, let and support people. And that's what I'm loving about the book, the Institute, and the leadership programs. And I run mixed gender first time leader programs in the pipeline and crane industries too. And I love, love, love working with young leaders that are just trying to figure out, hey, I'm trying to influence people's behavior. How do I go about doing this?
And that's a big deal as well. If you've got somebody coming in on Gen Z and leading baby boomers, that's that. I mean, the whole of that is a bit turning that around. That's a very different leadership style. I know I did a presentation for a hardware store that had people in their 70s and 17-year-olds, and the 17-year-olds are texting the 70-year-olds they're standing next to. It was just, and so I only had 45 minutes. You're not going to change anything, but I just made it all fun and
Yeah.
did all these fun activities just to make people aware of, okay, not everyone does it the way I do it. So it's not wrong, it's just different.
Different isn't wrong. That is one of my favorite sayings. Different isn't wrong. And it's really hard. I even catch myself while they're doing that differently from how I would do it. And it's like, but it's not wrong. And you picture, I was 21 when I got out of engineering school, me coming in to run a manufacturing plant with people who were 40 years older than me.
So the owners of the company were very brave.
Well, and then the gentleman, Ron Herbst, who I flew to visit, he and his wife right before I moved to Australia, and I'm so glad because he passed away soon after. When he put me in charge of that last baby food plant, I thought people are just like, oh my gosh, he's lost his marbles. I can't imagine the conversations that were going on behind closed doors about that. But yeah, he was a really incredible mentor. And I didn't have any women to mentor me. There was no one. There were no women in my position, not one in the entire country. 62 people. I was the only woman. There was not a woman above me. There was not a woman plant manager. There was not a woman on the senior executive team. None. Zero. So we had to be mentored by men.
That's interesting. And I wonder whether that was a benefit or not.
I always used to think that being a tall blonde Gretchen in the construction industry at conferences and things, or I'm up on stage and people remember. In fact, I changed my last name in between my first two times in construction and the second. And people would come up to me and say, I swear to God, you're Gretchen McComb, but your name tag says Gretchen Gagel. And I'm like, yeah, I'm Gretchen Gagel now. I'm back in the industry. I always saw it as an advantage. Because I did stand out and they would remember me. I mean, there were downsides too. I don't dwell on those stories, but
And just even, going to networking events for myself, because just in the community that I'm in, it's that's the lady with the blonde hair, it's and as I mature, the consideration is, do you cut your hair? And I've gone, no, because that's not how I see myself, and it's definitely not how other people see me. But it's those aspects, isn't it, of who you are, that it's the complete you.
It is. Well, and I've worn my hair in a ponytail for work. Oh gosh. Well, I wore it short for years too, but I've never let my hair go long regularly. And my current headshot, my hair is down. And that was a big moment for me. It sounds, and this is, men don't think about this. They don't have to think about hair up, hair down, jewelry, makeup, no makeup. But I just always tried to look as conservative as I could, because of behaviors. And so I was just like, okay, I'm just gonna look conservative.
Interesting. And again, men don't have to think about that. They have a uniform of a suit, and that's it. There's so much. And then women turning up in construction, the prejudice against them because they are women, depending on the companies that they work for and how the bosses in those business relate. There's just so much that it's not put on men. That's put on women.
I have to tell you a funny story. I was at a big conference. I think it was a Construction Industry Institute in Austin. I introduced myself to a gentleman at the cocktail party the second night, and he said, oh, we met last night. And I looked at him deadpan and I said, if one of you all would dye your hair purple, it'd be great because I could tell you apart. And he just started laughing, thankfully, that I said that out loud. But here, the blue blazer brigade, right? They're all in a blue blazer. They're all about the same age. And so I always thought it was an advantage to be a Gretchen,
Well, that's an advantage to women in the industry because they will stand out.
but it's interesting though, when I interviewed 40 or 50 construction leaders for the book, I had a couple of men say that women game the system. And I was like, what? What exactly do you think we're doing to game the system? It was a really interesting perspective of taking advantage. I have never, other than people remembering me, clearly thought that was an advantage being a woman in construction. I never got a promotion because I was a woman. In fact, I found out I wasn't being paid equal to my peers at one point. I mean, the list goes on and on, but it is a perspective that some people, and I try to be sensitive to others, once again, other people's perspectives, that somehow we're gaming the system. I don't know exactly how we're doing that, but
Yeah, interesting. And I'm just thinking about, and I know you have something in the US where there's sort of equal employment between males, females, ethnic groups and things, whether bringing more women in would be a man thinking, well, if it's, they're not going to be doing the job as well as a man and they're taking a man's role. Look, in the 80s, I was put off in a particular role because the boss was told I was doing worked in display in Myers and did all of their display department. But I was put off because he was told he had to cut back by one person. It wasn't, and I know two of us were really good at what we did. Wasn't the last one on. I was the only female, and I was told because my husband had a job.
yeah, your husband has a job, so you don't really need the money.
Correct.
Yeah, there's lots of those kinds of stories out there, but luckily, I feel like we're making progress. We need to make more.
I think we do. I definitely think we do. So tell me about before we wrap up and get the three top takeaways, because we've covered quite a few topics, and I told you we would do that today. We'll sort of revolve around things. Tell me about the book and why people should be interested in getting a copy of it.
22 chapters. I try to cover the gambit. It is a compilation. I've been CEO and managing director of four companies, right? I continue to coach CEOs. I have chaired boards and I have a PhD in leadership and I teach. I've tried to take all of that along with these experiences of the Anna Mears and different people of the world. And it's kind of like a reference book. It's kind of like a Seven Habits in a way, only I crammed a little bit more in there. So here, I just opened it to building powerful networks. So let's say you're just like, gosh, I really need to work on my ability to build networks. You can read that chapter. Here's a chapter on emotional intelligence. Gosh, I haven't really thought about what are the really important factors of emotional intelligence. Here's a chapter on building trust and psychological safety. That doesn't have anything to do with being a woman, right? This is building trust and psychological safety. A lot of stories, experiencing allyship from the perspective of being a woman in a male-dominated industry. But as I said, I just ran into a man who read it, and he's like, oh my gosh, it's a great book on leadership. So
Excellent.
yeah, I
No.
think it's just it,
Is that
but
a, have you got it as an audiobook yet at all, or is
not
that a plan?
yet. I'm hoping I need to connect with Wiley. Kind of have been focused on getting the institute up and running again, but I'm going through the next round of book tour things. So yeah, would like to have it as an audiobook too.
Excellent. How can people get in touch with you to purchase the book?
Yeah, so gretchengagel.com is my website. The book is available on Amazon. Really, it's on the Wiley website. And linking into me at Gretchen Gagel on LinkedIn. I'm very active on LinkedIn.
Excellent. No, that's great. Now, takeaways, Gretchen, what do you want out of everything that we've talked about? What do you want the listeners to take away?
Well, everyone is a leader on a spectrum, right? To me, leadership is influence. And I ask people in my leadership programs, do you aspire to be a great leader? Because if you do, like I don't aspire to be a great golfer. I've played 80 different golf courses, almost every golf course in the Sunshine Coast and Gold Coast near you in Brisbane.
Excellent. I'm a golfer as well, so I,
Great.
yeah.
Well, you can understand if I wanted to be a great golfer, I'd take lessons, I'd go to the driving range. I just want to be a good golfer that has fun and plays lots of different courses. So if you aspire to be a great leader, you'll invest in leadership skills, and that pays big dividends. My second takeaway is really just back yourself. If you don't back yourself, no one else is going to back yourself.
Yeah.
And it really ties into my third takeaway, which is we all have challenges with confidence at times. 70% of us are going to have imposter syndrome. I have a dragon. It's on my American desk. It's not on this one. In fact, I need a dragon in Australia too. When I thought about starting this institute, I told a girlfriend about it, and she said, "How old are you?" At the time, I was 59. And she said, "You have dragon slaying years left in you."
I love it.
And I bought a dragon, and it sits on my desk. It's an orange and red dragon. And there's days where I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't possibly start a global institute. How does anybody start a global institute? But what I have done is surround myself, 20 people on my advisory board, 8 people on my board, with people who share that passion. I don't have to do it alone. I don't have to have all the answers. I just had a meeting this morning with people about doing a major convening of bold thinkers. So everyone's a leader, and invest in being a good leader. Really back yourself, and know that you're not the only one out there that's having a problem with confidence on any given day. Michelle Sales, she lives north of you in the Sunshine Coast, wrote a great book on confidence. Allison Shamir wrote one on imposter syndrome. There's lots of resources out there to help you with your confidence, and I would just encourage you in your books, in podcast, to invest.
Love it. Absolutely love it. There are three great points. Everyone's a leader, and invest in yourself. And invest in yourself in whatever. I was talking, because I coach in public speaking, I'm talking to someone today, and they're talking about how they're so nervous and how being a good public speaker is probably one of the best skills you can have in business,
Yep.
because you can influence all of the things that you're talking about if you can get your message across clearly. And it does, it makes a big difference. Thank you so much for your time today, Gretchen. I wish you all the best with the book, and I'm sure that you will do amazing with it. And I noted that TED talk, the 8 steps of being a great working mum. That's I will go and track that down and have a listen to that as well. I really do appreciate your time today.
Awesome, Janine. It's been wonderful. I really appreciate you having me on as a guest.
Thank you. And that's another episode of the We Are Women podcast. Thank you so much for joining us, no matter where you are in the world. Remember, if you got any queries, you not sure about which steps to take next, then go to JanineVosper.com, book a strategy call. And I guarantee, if I'm not the right person to assist you, I know so many amazing women that will be able to help you achieve the results you want. So JanineVosper.com. I look forward to you joining us next time, wherever you are. On have a great day, week, month. Bye bye for now. We Are Women podcast. Bye.
So, do you feel stuck in a rut in business? Visit speechperfect.com.au and download Janine's free ebook to avoid the 5 most common stumbling blocks women face in business. It's jam-packed full of tips to overcome the barriers that could be holding you back from the success that you dream your business will be. We would love you to leave a review of today's episode and share this podcast with other women in need of entrepreneurial inspiration. Subscribe to the next episode now and join the We Are Women community.